In Boston today, a trial is underway that could end the use of race as a factor in college admissions. A nonprofit group called Students for Fair Admissions is suing Harvard University, alleging that the school's admissions policies discriminate against Asian American applicants. Spearheading the lawsuit is a conservative activist named Edward Bloom, who has organized efforts to end affirmative action before. Here's how he describes the problem.
It's racial discrimination and it's a quota. The quota today is against Asians, much like the quota back in the 1920s and 30s was against Jews.
The issues surrounding this case have opened up divisions within the Asian American community. We spoke to a couple of students.
My name is Kenny Hsu. I'm a senior at Davidson College and I'm a writer for The Federalist. I'm an Asian American, but to me, you know, the critical part of that is that I'm an American. And I think that I want to be looked at on the basis of my qualifications and on the content of my character, rather than the way that Harvard is looking at Asian Americans, rating them poor personalities, rating them people that are less desirable to get into college strictly because of their race.
My name is Sally Chen. I'm a current senior at Harvard College, studying history and literature and studies of women, gender, and sexuality. Asian Americans are being used as a racial wedge in a lot of ways, as a way of propping us up against other people of color and utilizing the quote-unquote model minority myth to perpetuate these ideas about who deserves to be in these institutions.
I'm personally for equal treatment of all races, so regardless of your race, ethnicity, I think that people should be treated on the basis of merit and opportunity. And I think that anytime a college decides to implement any kind of racial balancing positions, I think by necessity, it usually involves turning away people who are more merited and taking in people who are less qualified.
I truly believe that my admissions file, my application, could not have been as compelling as it ended up being for my admissions officer had I not been able to talk about my race in a really meaningful way, along with my other identities as a child of immigrants, as a first-generation college student, as someone who comes from a low-income family. It does an injustice to all students, including Asian Americans, to try to portray us as if we are a monolith.
I grew up around Princeton, New Jersey area, so there are a lot of people there who were very academic and very obsessed with college. And so I think that when you have that kind of environment, it really doesn't help when a school like Harvard basically says to you, oh, your application is not worth as much as another guy's application because it looks like you're trying too hard or because it seems like you're not worthy based on characteristics that, you know, we can't change about ourselves.
I don't think there's a person on this campus who could deny that they have benefited from having a diverse student body and a diverse campus. I think that, in fact, the conversation has evolved to actually be more about how Harvard could be doing more for its students to do better recruiting, to get diversity within diversity, thinking about Asian Americans as being comprised of multiple ethnic groups, including Southeast Asians and more recent immigrants and Pacific Islanders.
Joining me now to discuss the lawsuit against Harvard is Natasha Wariku, an associate professor of education at Harvard University and author of The Diversity Bargain. Thanks for being here, Natasha.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us in studio in New York is Hua Xu, staff writer for The New Yorker. Hua, thanks for being
here. Very stoked to be here.
So, Natasha, let's start with you. You're currently at Harvard University, which is being sued in this case. Are you involved in this lawsuit in any way?
No, I'm not.
So tell us a little bit about how Harvard's policy admissions work. Where does race factor in, if it factors in at all?
So Harvard has a holistic admissions policy, which means that the admissions office looks at a whole host of factors when deciding whether to admit a student. This includes, of course, academics. But in addition to academics, it's also looking at particular talents that a student might have outside of the academics, like musical talent. Perhaps someone has done some pretty serious science research. They are also looking at athletics and, you know, manning the sports teams. Of course, the legacies are a part of this. And race is one of these factors, particularly underrepresented groups, African-American, Latino, Native American groups, a kind of diverse, make sure that those voices are part of the student body on campus to provide a diverse learning environment.
You mentioned the underrepresented groups. You did not mention Asian-Americans or legacy students, and I'm wondering why that was.
Yes. Children of people who went to Harvard or have some kind of affiliation get a kind of closer look. They get an extra read and, you know, they do get a small leg up. And in terms of Asian Americans, the university denies that they're penalizing Asian Americans in the admissions process. And what the plaintiffs are trying to do in this case is to tie this question of, are Asian Americans penalized vis-a-vis whites, to are whites penalized vis-a-vis underrepresented minorities. Now, I should say, under the law, there's a compelling state interest to give a boost to underrepresented minorities for this diverse learning environment. The converse is not true between, you know, when we're comparing Asian Americans to whites in admissions.
Well, I want to come to you because you just wrote a big piece about this in The New Yorker. You interviewed several Asian and Asian American activists who actually are in support of the lawsuit. Can you give us a sense of why they feel that way, why they stand there?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of division within the Asian American community. It might not be as great as is often reported, but there is a very small, very vocal group within the Chinese American immigrant population that is very much invested in notions of opportunity, meritocracy. You know, they often spoke about the American dream in a way that I think a lot of people who've been in America a while don't necessarily sort of see as contractually binding. And it's just sort of this perfect storm. Edward Blum is really interested in changing the cultural conversation around affirmative action, around race consciousness. And a lot of these predominantly, I would say, middle class, fairly kind of well-to-do, single-issue Chinese American voters, particularly in suburban areas, they don't really experience the diversity that a college campus might provide for them. You know, they just see this as taking something away from them.
And Natasha, is that true? Is something being taken away from these Asian American students? Because you said earlier that not everyone can get into Harvard, right?
Right. And in fact, very few people do get into Harvard. And I think we have to be clear on what we're sort of talking about here. I think the evidence is very unclear about whether there is any kind of penalty for Asian Americans applying to Harvard. You know, they are Asian Americans who are admitted do have higher SAT scores and GPAs, but this is not how the university admits students, of course, right? There are all of these other factors that I described. And on balance, on all these other factors, white students seem to be stronger than Asian Americans. And that's why you see this discrepancy. So, you know, for example, athletic recruiting, that benefits white students over all students of color and legacy boosts as well. And there are a whole host of other things, like, you know, wanting representation from all 50 states of the country. And of course, people of color are concentrated on the coasts. So, you know, then the question becomes, why are we kind of attacking affirmative action when there are all these other policies that, you know, and are those fair? That's a question that I think the university has to answer and is making decisions about, you know, furthering its kind of goals as a university. And I don't know that anyone has the right to go to Harvard.
Well, that's one of the things that's been debated hotly in this affirmative action debate is, you know, who's having something taken away. Well, you spoke to Edward Blum. He was also behind the Abigail Fisher trial that a lot of people might remember, who was the young white woman who claimed that she was the victim, if you will, of affirmative action.
Right.
Is Edward Blum really trying to help the Asian American community in your estimation, in your reporting, or is he really using this as a pawn, if you will, in a broader strategy?
I guess I would hesitate to say he's using them as a pawn because a lot of the activists were already organizing. Like, they were already organizing around issues of college admissions. And, you know, there is precedent for elite institutions like Harvard, you know, tweaking admissions plans when it comes to Asian Americans. In the 80s and 90s, there were a series of cases that the DOJ looked into. So it's not beyond question. And I think Blum is tapping into this sense of paranoia. He's giving a sort of larger narrative shape to a lot of the activism that was already existing. Whether or not he actually cares, I can't really say. But I think there's a real sort of synchronicity in these interests that benefits both sides.
Natasha, Harvard says that getting rid of race would overwhelmingly benefit white students. Is there an argument here for other things like looking at class, which has often come up in affirmative action debates?
Absolutely. You know, I think that to me, these are not either or, right? We should be able to think about underrepresented minority groups because of the history of racial exclusion in the United States. But we also need to do a lot better in elite college admissions in class diversity. You know, these universities are predominantly serving well-to-do families. You know, admission to these places is higher than median household income in this country. And while many students are on financial aid, an overrepresentation of students who are not on financial aid. So absolutely, we need to do a lot more about class. But I don't think that this has to be an either-or question.
Well, I'm curious, your reporting focused on Chinese immigrant community, and I'm wondering, we often use these terms, Asian American, Latinos, et cetera, to really lump together very distinct groups of people. Do you think that this case is revealing anything about the limits of how we define, quote unquote, Asian Americans in the United States?
That's a great question. And I think we're starting to see some of that fracture, because even within the Chinese American population that I spent a lot of time with, there's a lot of differences in how they see the world and sort of how I see the world or how my parents saw the world. So I think a lot of it has to do with where you're getting your information, sort of what your social network is, literally, but also online. A lot of the folks I talked to just had completely different inflection points in their political awakening than someone my age or someone who had been acculturated in the United States.
And we're going to assume that we're a little older than some of the college students, right? We don't have to be specific. Natasha, you're included. We don't have to be specific there. Exactly, right. 22. Natasha, curious if you can tell us a little bit about Harvard's personality rating, because that seems to be something that also factors into this and could negatively impact Asian American students.
Yeah, so I've looked at these the reports of The Economist, and there does seem to be a small penalty for Asian Americans on this personality rating. So they do this, the plaintiff's economist does this analysis where he controls for all of these other factors and then shows that on balance, Asian Americans have a slightly, and it's pretty small, but do have a slightly lower average personality rating. That personality rating is a kind of subjective measure. It's supposed to include things like grit, you know, overcoming hardship, this sort of perseverance, these kinds of qualities. And, you know, I think that it's possible that there is some kind of implicit racial bias at play here. You know, it's hard to, we know from the research on implicit racial bias that that implicit racial biases towards minority groups are pretty widespread in this country. And, you know, there's no reason to think that admissions officers would be different, but there might be something at play here about stereotypes about Asian Americans. I'm willing to believe that might be the case. I think we don't have enough information to know if it is, but it seems to play a pretty small role in the overall decision-making when you look at the coefficient. You
know, well, we've got about 30 seconds left, Juan. I'm just curious, did the students that you interviewed, were they concerned at all about this impact, how this might impact other ethnic and racial diversity at Harvard?
Not particularly among the Asian American students, although I didn't speak to as many. But I do think it brings to mind one of the problems with this debate, which is that it's about this principle of diversity, which was never the originating impulse for affirmative action, right? It was about desegregation. It was about the right to go to school at all. And the fact that it's been winnowed down to this conversation about sort of what the diversity policy of Harvard University is, it's sort of sad when you think about how ambitious affirmative action was once as a sort of a philosophical approach to improving America and achieving America.
Natasha Warrico is an associate professor of education at Harvard University, and Washu is a staff writer for The New Yorker. Thanks to you both.
Thanks for having me.
And a lot of you have thoughts on college admissions.
Neil Picard, West Palm Beach, Florida. I would eliminate legacy slots and also make the process a blind assessment. Due to bias against certain races and ethnic groups, children who fall into those groups have a higher hurdle to clear to get admitted.
Hi, JC, and I'm from the greater New York City area. I think for college admissions, the process definitely is very, very unfair. Several changes need to happen. First, you need to get rid of preferences for legacies, athletes, and kids of VIPs and donors. Second, the current affirmative action system needs reform.
Joshua Brothers, Holiday, Utah. The college admissions process is fair, but we got to remember that these institutions are businesses first. And what I feel we've done is unfairly propped up secondary education as the gatekeepers of our society. And that unfairly diminishes the value of technical schools, apprenticeships, and other forms of learning. It's extended the length of public education to a point where citizens are forced to pay to play.
This is Robin McCoy from Castro Valley, California. My child had a college admissions counselor. She's a smart kid, got good grades, and had an excellent ACT score. But I also feel that not everyone has the opportunity she had, and that for a kid who, like me, was poor and didn't have good parental support, it would be much harder to get into college, especially now.
It's one of my favorite parts of the show when everyone calls in, so thank you for your comments. You can always find us on Facebook and leave a comment there, or tweet us at The Takeaway. Thanks so much for being with us today. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. See you tomorrow.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.